You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Let's say you want to write a book in the next 30 days. So, like, there's all these, like, guidebooks. I feel like all these thousand-year-old stories, they fall under two categories. One is sort of the listicle of how to behave, and the other is kind of the story. So there's the story of Jesus, the story of Krishna, the story of Buddha. So all of those are kind of, you know, these seminal stories, these archetypical stories that you could write a novel around, or these guides to living that Buddha, Jesus, you know, Muhammad, Lao Tzu, whoever came up with. You could write, like, the Tao of cybersecurity, or the Tao of parenting, or the Tao of whatever.
Oh, I was going to write the Tao of comedy. I really, it's an idea I had. It's because as soon as I read your article, I thought, I wrote a paper in college in my early philosophy of early China class about the Zhuangzi and comedy. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to take that article and turn it into an Amazon book and then throw it out to the world. Why
exactly.
not?
Exactly. Like, right, hold on.
That's exactly what came to mind. And then I had three other ideas really quickly with stoicism and sales and a handful of other things.
So I'm gonna just Google Tao quotes and let's take, here's 20 inspiring quotes from Lao Tzu. So now you can even have images you could put on each chapter.
The best thing about this is that you guys are watching and listening to this, but James is going to be charging thousands of dollars for a class for this like a month.
But I wrote the article all for free, and I told people just write a book in 3 days. Go for it. Okay, this is perfect for comedy. Here's a Lao Tzu quote from the Tao Te Ching. Nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. Go, apply it to comedy.
Oh, I mean, that's timing. You know what the number one rule of comedy is? Timing.
Right, and also, if you panic in the middle of your set, like, let's say people are not laughing.
Yeah.
A lot of comedians have a tendency to speed up because they're afraid.
Oh, yeah.
But actually, the exact advice, the correct advice is to slow down. And get kind of back in your body, in your frame.
Patience saves you on stage way more than just taking action.
Right, and then you could show examples from Richard Pryor, Rodney Dangerfield.
All these different clips, tons of this stuff.
Okay, so let's find another one.
Isn't singularity concept kind of like popularized by movies and stuff?
Yeah, but they're all just wrong.
Yeah.
I mean,
there was like all these movies. There's a whole bunch of movies that came out in like the early and mid aughts that were all about like a big computer who has access to everything. It's turning all the lights red. Oh my God, no one could go anywhere. Like that was the plot of like every film.
Ever since like basically
Terminator, right?
No, 2001, A Space Odyssey. Right?
Earlier, right?
Arthur C. Clarke.
No, Arthur C. Clarke's with
1969.
Yeah, or even earlier. I don't know.
I think it was, that's a good question. I think it was 65? 66?
Or you can also argue Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yeah, but it's not AI.
Frankenstein was alive and it was a robot.
Yeah, but he was a dead person. It's not a computer.
Well, Frankenstein wasn't dead.
No, it was like, not that, but like, it's a collection of human parts.
1968.
All right, so you're saying it woke up some human part from before.
Right, okay. Right. So it's like, it used to be like a superstitious, like when people die, they have a soul, and they can, can get another soul into another body.
Jay lecturing me on 1800s English literature. That's good.
I'm Chinese, we believe in reincarnation.
Yeah.
You believe in reincarnation?
No.
Okay.
Because well
that's what we study.
Because Buddhism and Taoism doesn't really believe in reincarnation.
And Buddhism is kind of
it depends on what like Zen Buddhism, no.
Yeah.
And Buddha himself was sort of neutral other than to just explain Buddhism to Hindus.
But some other branches, you know,
Tibetan Buddhism does.
Yeah, they're like if you die you go to hell, you go through these bridges, and that depends what you did in your past life, you either reincarnate into like a cow or into animal or into grass.
Right, so I sort of feel like that's the Hindu slant on Buddhism, but it's not like the Chinese or the
Buddhism is sort of half born out of Hinduism anyway. So they kind of take, you know, some of the contact.
Well, but okay, so my understanding of this is that the Buddha was the first one to break the cycle of endless reincarnation, which was that he through becoming a bodhisattva, became enlightened, and then broke that cycle. And that's essentially what the concept of following the Eightfold Path is.
So I think. So a couple of comments on that is that I think, you know, Buddha was basically addressing Hindus in all of his talks. It's unclear whether he believed any of that, but his whole point was that following this, the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism, is that you could break the cycle and stop reincarnating. But it was unclear whether he actually believed in reincarnation or whether he believed in any god. There's some evidence. There's a book by Stephen Batchelor, who was a Buddhist priest for a long time, Confessions of a Buddhist Atheist, and he really digs into what's called the Pali Canon, which are the actual words of Buddha, where there's no mention of any theism at all, that Buddha might actually have not ever spoken about any gods or goddesses or polytheistic or monotheistic. It might have just been Buddha had this philosophy that never mentioned religion at all.
Yeah.
But the Eightfold Path, that was more just about if you're not going to do kind of this, you know, meditation and follow Buddha's exact path, there's this other path of just righteous living. So you quote unquote at least reincarnate better.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, separate from how he religiously felt, but thought that, okay, if you're not going to do the full thing, at least do this so you live a good life.
Yeah. This is like that's like the guidebook for normal people.
Yeah, it's kind of like Buddhism Light. Guide to was the Eightfold
Buddhism
Path.
Light. It's like the handbook for people who want some Buddhism.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Because isn't it? It's like, you know, write words, write this, write that. Like it's just about living a good life, and you don't have to meditate, but you'll be happier if you do it this way. It's also kind of yoga that's like that as well, where. Just I forget what the name of it is, but it's just instead of doing the full yoga, it's just live this good charitable life, and that's a branch of yoga as well. But it's not going to give you the full benefits of yoga.
Yeah, good enough, basically.
Yeah, where you're good just, enough yoga.
Yeah,
good enough religion.
I guess like it's weird because I suppose your choice. I feel like it's weird because there's no if you're a Christian, you've got to be. A monk, there's one way to go, or like, but then I feel like you don't have an option of like doing that light. Like you got to go to church and like do all this stuff.
No, but light you could say is, living a good life, going to, you know, whether you're a Catholic or Christian, going to church once a week.
Anglicanism.
Yeah, and
the serious side is Southern Baptist.
And Anglicanism also is more about when you pray, it's like a direct communication with God as opposed to kind of this intermediary like a pope or a priest
or something. Yeah.
And then you could argue that being a priest or a minister or reverend is what you need to do to be fully, you know, like a Buddhist monk or something like that.
Well, it's weird. Joseph Campbell talks about that. He attended one of the first like global interfaith conferences. I'm a big fan of Campbell, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Big fan of Campbell. And he attended one of the first interfaith conferences globally. And it was funny because he said that all of the clerics of each religion who were like the priests and pastors and, you know, whatever, all disagreed with each other. But all of the monks of every religion completely got along with each other like super well. The people who were like living it got along way better than the people who were just like talking about it and talking about the specifics of it, which I thought was kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it is interesting because I guess on one hand, you're dealing with a lot more bureaucratic issues, which everybody could disagree with. But on the other hand, when you get to the core, there is always this sense that they're all kind of the same. Right? Like Jay, you've mentioned to me, you were raised both Buddhist and Taoist, and you could argue they're very, at the core, they're almost exactly the same. Like Zen Buddhism and Taoism are almost exactly the same.
Yeah, just be a good person. It's just that what's really different is the superstitious they believe, right? Taoism believe more in like ghosts and, you know, like...
Taoism believes in ghosts?
Yeah, then like...
right. Well, so when you get to the structurally, as outside of the Tao Te Ching, which doesn't mention ghosts, which is the only real textbook in the main Taoism, if you go to the cultures that grew up in it, there's all these rituals. Just like with Buddhism, there's Tibetan Buddhism and all these others. But just at the core, Zen Buddhism and Taoism seem similar. The only difference I would say is Taoism can also be interpreted as completely a political book and not a religious book at all. So some people have interpreted it that way. That all, because all the advice can be taken just politically. Like, and as if it was, just like Confucius wrote his texts for a leader, it could be argued Lao Tzu wrote his text for a leader.
There was a rabbi who someone challenged him and said, can you recite the entire of the Talmud for standing on one foot? And then he like lifted his leg and he said, do not do unto others what would be reprehensible if done unto yourself. The rest is commentary. Huh. And like that, I feel like I like that.
That's a good story.
Yeah. I forget who said that, but I heard it through Christopher Hitchens. Like
another atheist, which is an interesting word. Like all these people say, oh, I'm an atheist. In other words, they're an ist, right? So they believe in some basically religion or cult or whatever.
I feel like it takes a lot to go like, there's no God definitively. I mean, like, how do you know?
Well,
like,
and also then it's like, what makes you different from any other religious practitioner? Like here, now you have to come up with a set of a code to live by,
yeah.
or not. And, you know, a lot of people just don't think about it, but all those people who kind of like raise their hands, like, no, atheism, and they go marching in the streets about it practically, or they can't talk to people unless it's, you know, who have anything, you know, religious to say. It's sort of like a religion by itself.
Oh my God.
It's so annoying.
I went on a date with this woman in New York, and on the first, like within the first 5 minutes, she said to me, we're at this bar called Bua, by the way, in East Village, which is great. Anyway, we're at this bar, and in the first 5 minutes, she's like, what do you believe in? Do you believe in God or what? And I'm like, well, that's a complicated answer. And she's like, what do you mean? Like, do you or not? And I'm like, well, I just met you. Like, how into this do you want to get? And so I start like telling her all my like beliefs and stuff. I'm like, well, because this was a huge part of my life for a long time. I read a ton of Joseph Campbell and like come from a family that's like tons of different faiths and a part of the, you know, Metro Detroit that was like all these different faiths. And I, as I'm telling her this stuff, she's like, I can feel her like tightening up and she's getting like really weird. And she's like, I think I'm going to go. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, you just clearly believe that there's like a God and he controls your life. And he like, I'm like, I didn't say any of these things. Like, and she's like freaking out about this. And I just, from now on, I'm like, you know what? I'm not even approaching that topic with people.
It reminds me of, so in this brief period between marriage number one and marriage number two, I went on a date, and this is where social media can both help and hurt. So I saw this girl was interested in the Kabbalah, which is like this kind of
Jewish, very...
Yeah, Jewish mysticism. So that day, I didn't know anything about the Kabbalah at all. So that day, I went to the bookstore, bought like 6 books on Kabbalah, skimmed through all of them, and then acted on the date. Like, I didn't know what she was at all, but then I would start like dropping in like these kind of clauses or like really meaningful.
Yeah, no shit.
And she's like, oh, are you also? And then, you know, it was very manipulative on my part. She was very like happy to have met me and was calling for like the next week or so. And I just wasn't interested. But again, the dangers of back then, social media, not everybody was using social media to dig up all the information.
That's so funny. I'm just going to sidestep that whole conversation now. And if everybody ever asks me what I am, I go, Scientologist. That's what I 110% am. The world was created by Thetans. Yeah, by Xenu.
But this is okay. This is where Joseph Campbell comes in. So actually, I like this as this is what I just recommended in a Joseph Campbell kind of idea that you could basically write a book in 30 days.
Not only did you just recommend this, I'm completely doing this.
Oh yeah, you read it. I saw you like that.
I read it and I was like, I think I was at my computer and I jumped away from it and my girlfriend was like, what what the hell? And I was like, I know exactly what my next three projects are going to be. Like,
right, because you could literally write, with what we're about to describe, you could literally write a book a month for the rest of your life.
Oh, easily, easily.
So, and it's because of Joseph Campbell, by the way, kind of connecting the dots. So basically what he says, essentially, is that there is these primal stories that we all relate to. And if you could structure your story within one of these primal structures, your story is going to be a bestseller. So George Lucas, who came essentially just a few years after Joseph Campbell wrote that, George Lucas said, huh, I'm going to apply this to basically a science fiction Western,
space fantasy Western. Yeah.
And you know, Joseph Campbell's thing is the arc of the hero. Like, the hero gets this call to action and he rejects it at first, but then he has to go on it. And then he has bigger and bigger problems and he meets, you know, more and more useful friends until finally the final battle. And then he comes back to tell a story. But the real idea is that there are these structures, these story structures that have been focus grouped by billions of people over the past 3,000 years, where if you steal that structure, you know it's going to work. So for instance, have you ever seen the movie The Legend of Bagger Vance or read the book?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the one you use in the,
So Stephen Pressfield, who's been on this podcast, he wrote this book. It was a major bestseller, and then it was a major movie starring Will Smith and Matt Damon. Matt Damon's this golfer in the 1920s. Will Smith is this quasi-mystical caddy that just shows up and helps him. And later, Stephen Pressfield wrote a book called The Authentic Swing, which said he, beat by beat, like every single chapter in that novel, The Legend of Bagger Vance, including the names of all the characters, comes from the Bhagavad Gita, which is like the seminal religious text for all of Hinduism.
Yeah.
And he just, I don't want to say he stole it, but he totally stole that text and just replaced, and instead of putting it on a battlefield in the middle of India with Krishna as the charioteer of Arjuna, he has the golfer is Arjuna. Will Smith is the Krishna character, and it's in 1920s Georgia, and it's not a war; it's a golf tournament.
Yeah, well, it's like it's crazy because that can apply to like so much. That's why I loved that article. Is I was like, oh my god, this applies to so many things. That this stuff is just lying around. That like Pablo Picasso has that quote where he says, "Good artists borrow, great artists steal." And you're like, well, there's something to that because there's like not just The Legend of Bagger Vance, but think about Mary Poppins, which is a movie I love. And I'm like obsessed with it. I think it's got way more layers than people give it credit for. Like it's a fantastic, if I could be anything in my life, I just want to be a Bert from Mary Poppins. I just want to sing and dance.
Is that the little kid?
No. Bert is the character played by what's his name? The actor, Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's played by Dick Van Dyke, and he just sings and dances, has a terrible British accent, and is entirely charming and hangs out with Julie Andrews the whole time. I just want to be that guy, like, in my life. But
I feel like I want to be Dick Van Dyke in every single show he's ever been in.
He's amazing.
Like a TV writer in the Dick Van Dyke show.
Dude, he's amazing. The doctor from whatever that show was where he played the doctor.
And then there was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's like just a cool, handsome guy.
Yeah,
and
like almost 90 years old. He's in the sequel to Mary Poppins, jumping up on a desk and like dancing. And like the guy's, I mean, he's amazing. So anyway, that's my whole life. All I've wanted to do is be Bert from Mary Poppins.
But like even like, so thinking of like children's books, even like the Cat in the Hat is the arc of the hero, right? These two little kids get the call to action when the cat shows up at their door.
Yeah.
And then it just gets more and more insane and more,
yeah,
you know, thing one and thing two show up and like all this crazy stuff happens. And then finally at the end, they have the story to tell.
Well, that's what I was gonna say is like, that's exactly, Mary Poppins is like a semi, like a quasi celestial being who comes down and you can, all of these, I mean, even the author of that book, whose name escapes me at the time, she even talks about how she was very influenced by all of this like Eastern philosophy to create this book basically and this story.
Right. So for instance, let's say you want to write a book in the next 30 days. Let's say you're interested in parenting. So Robin, you're sitting here, you're interested in parenting. You read all these books on parenting. You can either write Zen and the Art of Parenting and then you could take, you just mentioned earlier, the Eightfold Path in Buddhism. You could apply each one of those points to good parenting. Like here's the Eightfold Path. Here are the eight steps you need to be a good parenting. And you can either call it Zen and the Art of Parenting, or don't mention that you're stealing this from Zen or Buddhism at all and say, This is the eight steps to being the ideal parent, and just steal word for word completely the Eightfold Path. No one's going to give a shit because it's just, you know, their words, and no one will even know. Oh, well, this she stole this from Buddha from 300 BC. No one's going to say that. And yet, then
what,
you take,
what was Buddha doing with it? It was right. just lying around.
and then there's, then you fill in your own for each point on the Eightfold Path. I got to look up what's the Eightfold Path now. Like, I forget the exact 8 points, but you, for each point, you could think of your own personal stories, and you could weave in the stories of others, and you could weave in situations and research, yeah. and some boom, you'll have a book that's perfectly
structured.
Well, this
structured. Is like Ryan Holiday kind of has a whole, he did this with Stoicism, and so did
right. He totally takes every aspect of Stoicism and then one aspect at a time, you know, kind of writes a book about it. And we already know it's going to be a success because it's been already a success for 2,500 years.
Yeah, so it's already great.
And by the way, let's say there are millions of ideas that people have come up with in the past 2,500 years. This is one of the seven that have survived those millions of ideas. So we know that society after society, century after century, these ideas have flourished, and he's just bringing it into the, not just, but he's bringing it into the modern day. So we know that concept is going to be successful. So now, hold on, I'm going to look up what the eightfold
path is.
Yeah.
Are we going to do this live and then talk about how to be an eightfold parent?
Yeah, exactly. Or whatever anybody's interested in. We'll okay. So, Wikipedia always has to make it more complicated. I just want the 8 points. Okay. Like, right speech. Okay. Is number three. So, okay. What you say to your kids
matters.
Yeah. Matters.
Chapter 3.
And then you tell stories like, okay, if you act like, if you're always complaining when you get home from work, your kid's going to grow up kind of like whining and complaining and being a victim. You
know? I just love, the greatest thing about this too is I think we just discovered that it doesn't almost even matter what you write because it's like, it's founded on this great document. But like,
right, right. So if you just have the first, if you just have the chapters, you know, right view, right resolve, right speech, right action, right livelihood. Okay. Someone could read the chapters and say, oh yeah, I'm glad I bought this book. Now I know what to do with my kids. Or you could start going into each chapter. And by the way, for a book to be self-published on Amazon, 30 pages, 60 pages, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't have to be anything.
Right.
Yeah.
You could write one page per chapter here, but everyone's got stories. When I say write speech, it brings to mind different things for everyone. Like, yeah. Okay, what you say,
which is,
your kids
but it's
will
also
do.
Like, part of what I feel like part of what we just learned in this lesson is that thousands of years ago, the only thing you had to do in order to be prolific was to have an idea like, hey, like maybe try to say good things. Yeah. Like that's literally what that idea is. There's no specifics.
Right, but then it doesn't change. Like you could still,
like my dad gave me that advice.
Right, right, right. Exactly. So your dad, so that's a story in there. Or you know, we have kids, so we can think about the times where we've said bad things and then later on heard our kids
yeah.
repeat it. Whether it was a, you know, just using bad language or kind
if
of.
If you're listening to this, just send this audio transcript to temi.com and this is your book. Like we've already written it for you.
Right. So, and again, you know, it's almost better not to say Zen and the art of parenting because then people will have these preconceived notions. Oh, why are they using Zen? It's better to say like, you know, call your book The Ultimate Parent or, you know, which is Nirvana,
yeah.
but as a parent or, you know, eight steps to you know, eight easy steps to being the best parent on the planet or whatever. And, right effort is one of the points. It's point number six on the Eightfold Path. So, okay, you don't tell your kids to work hard. Use yourself as an example. This is what it's like to work hard. I'm working hard, but this is time now I'm devoting to you and I'm very focused on you, the children. So, showing what right effort is so that you model it for the kid. And then I'm sure there's research on this and I'm sure there's other stories.
You can start plugging all this stuff in. Yeah, there right. you go. Each one of those points, all you gotta
history.
Do is start throwing in research and stuff and be like, yeah, here we go. It's a well-researched book.
Right. And you know the structure works because again, there was millions of ideas talked about and millions of listicles made in 300 BC between 300 BC and now, but this one happens to be, you know, a billion people like this one, the Eightfold Path. So this will work. So what's another topic? So there's cybersecurity.
Yeah, there we go. Cybersecurity.
Eight steps to a cybersecurity policy for the government.
Or right actions. Right words.
Yeah, yeah. Right words. Like right actions. Like
but it's Jay. It's like okay. So first of all, here's all right. So this is every single one of these ideas is great because it's like you really could write a book on it. But like none of this explains like any of these subjects. I feel like
well, but maybe not because or maybe yes because look, right speech. Eliot Spitzer was once giving a talk to a conference of lawyers pre his whole prostitution scandal, whatever, when he was still a DA. And he said to the lawyers, the greatest thing you guys have done for this is emailing with your clients because he subpoenas all the emails and finds the crimes. So right speech right there is, you know, they all should have practiced right speech. They all should have practiced right action, like not email each other. Maybe meet people face to face if you want to conceal your crimes. Like, you know, right mindfulness. Be careful what you're doing when you're just sending someone a text.
Hey,
be aware.
Think about shit before you do it.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's literally the advice my dad gave me. Like, I was like, Dad, should I become a lawyer or should I become a comedian? And what he should have said is, well, do you like money or not? But what he said instead was, yeah, I think you should think about it. I'm like, this doesn't help me at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
the
fifth step on the Eightfold Path is right livelihood. So he was trying to give you the right livelihood. And you have a story, you have a personal story, and then there's all this research about what leads to happiness. Is happiness the goal? What income is needed for happiness? Yeah. And that's all falls under the right livelihood chapter. Yeah. And again, you don't have to refer. This is, by the way, we're taking Buddhism and applying it to how to live a good life.
No,
it's just like you write a book, The Good Life, and you just have these eight chapters.
The Good
Life. By the way, we only picked randomly because we discussed it earlier.
We could do it. This is, I just love it. And then Stephen Pressfield can write a book about how you, he's like, this, how to live a good life was ripped word for word from.
Yeah, exactly. The authentic parent is not authentic
parent
at all, but how Buddha would be a parent.
He ripped this word from Mein Kampf. No.
Yeah, so like there's all these like guidebooks. I feel like all these, you know, thousand-year-old stories, they fall under two categories. One is sort of the listicle of how to behave, and the other is kind of the story. So there's the story of Jesus, the story of Krishna, the story of Buddha. So all of those are kind of, you know, these seminal stories, these archetypical stories that you could write a novel around, or these guides to living that Buddha, Jesus, you know, Muhammad, Lao Tzu, whoever came up with, you could write like the Tao of cybersecurity or the Tao of parenting or the Tao of whatever.
Oh, I was going to write the Tao of comedy. It's an idea I had. It's because as soon as I read your article, I thought I wrote a paper in college in my early philosophy of early China class about the Zhuangzi and comedy. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to take that article and turn it into an Amazon book and then throw it out into the world. Why
exactly.
not?
Exactly. Like, right, hold on.
That's exactly what came to mind. And then I had three other ideas really quickly. That's stoicism and sales and a handful of other things.
So I'm gonna just Google Tao quotes and let's take here's 20 inspiring quotes from Lao Tzu. So now you can even have images you could put on each chapter.
The best thing about this is that you guys are watching and listening to this, but James is going to be charging thousands of dollars for a class for this. like a month.
But I wrote the article all for free and I told people just write a book in 3 days.
Yeah. Okay, then I am.
Go for it. Okay, this is perfect for comedy. Here's a Lao Tzu quote from the Tao Te Ching. Nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. Go, apply it to comedy.
Oh, I mean, that's timing. You know what the number one rule of comedy is? Timing.
Right, and also, if you panic in the middle of your set, like let's say people are not laughing.
Yeah.
A lot of comedians have a tendency to speed up because they're afraid.
Oh, yeah.
But actually, the exact advice, the correct advice is to slow down.
Yep.
And get kind of back in your body, in your frame.
The patience saves you on stage way more than just taking action.
Right. And then you could show examples from Richard Pryor, Rodney Dangerfield.
All these different clips. Yeah. Tons of stuff.
Okay. So let's find another one. I'm just picking randomly. I don't even know what the quote is until I read it. A leader is best when people barely know he exists. When his work is done, his aim fulfilled, they will say, we did it ourselves. Okay, trick here, apply it to comedy. So I'll say it again. A leader is best when people barely know he exists. When his work is done, his aim fulfilled, all the people will say, we did it ourselves.
Actually, I'm going to flip that around and say this. There's a Ben Franklin quote. I don't know if he really said it, but I saw it in the John Adams made for TV, like, you know, miniseries on HBO, where he said, in France, one must fulfill the art of accomplishing much while appearing to accomplish little. And I think that that's true of comedy. Which
right,
is
so
that,
that's the same as this. So he's basically, yeah. he basically stole this quote. He figured nobody in France has read the Tao Te Ching, and he reworded it in his own words, and that's... That quote has survived 300 years until
you just
said it.
But think about Chappelle, because let's add to the context here. Think about Chappelle and his last few specials. Especially this especially applies to the Bird Revelation, though, that special, which is he's on stage, and he even talks about it, like with Iceberg Slim and the book Pimp. Like it's the same thing. Like he has to know he has to appear like a complete master with effortless control over everything that he's doing, because that appearance actually does matter. And it is relevant. And so he has to allow people in the space that he's in to think, this guy is so nonchalant, he's a complete virtuoso in what he's doing. Meanwhile, Dave Chappelle has been on stage how many times, has been writing how much, has been... I mean, all of this is like all background.
But I'll take it further with that set of Dave Chappelle specials. A lot of times people will comment about Dave Chappelle, yeah, I'm pretty sure he was just riffing right there on the spot and making it up. So Dave Chappelle, the performer slash comedian... really didn't exist on stage, even though he had done every single joke and line and even movement probably thousands of times across on stages across America just to prepare for those Netflix specials. You weren't aware that that material existed. You thought that this was just coming from his core.
Yeah, spontaneously creating from his being.
Like, for instance, in that series of specials, I forgot the name of which one this was, but he says, okay, before the end of this show, I'm going to talk about the four different times I met O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
And then the show ends after the third time.
Yep.
And everybody's standing up, clapping. He goes behind the curtains close. And then he's like, wait. And he comes back and says, I forgot to tell you about the fourth time. So clearly he didn't forget. Clearly that was part of the act.
Yeah.
But you don't have this sense. The comedian side seemed to have disappeared. The material, you have no sense that he's doing material. And that's really what this is saying here, is that get rid of all the notion, for a comedian, get rid of the notion of material. Don't let them see that you're doing material.
Yeah.
Make it seem spontaneous. And by the way, let them think they did it themselves. Probably everybody was wondering before he came back, did he even forget the fourth time?
Yeah, did we forget? What happened? And then like all of that questioning. And then I'd say the second thing to that is in his last special, Sticks and Stones, after the credits, there's a whole 20-minute story. If you watch the whole thing through the credits, suddenly a secret, you can't click on it to watch it later. You don't know it exists unless you watch the whole special. Other 20 minutes of Dave Chappelle telling the story comes up after the special. And like that's the kind of thing that is like purely orchestrated. But the feeling of like surprise and delight, instantaneous, nonchalantness, all of that comes out. You feel like you're experiencing this with Dave Chappelle right now in this moment versus you're part of an entire plan and strategy he had. You're riding a roller coaster, but you don't even know it.
Right. So boom, the Tao of comedy.
Just wrote it.
You said three projects. What other projects based on this idea?
Oh, one was the stoicism in sales, which is something I've thought about for a while.
All right, let me look up.
Cuz like I've had this whole career doing sales because comedy doesn't pay the bills.
Unless
you can freestyle rap like who did you
have? Oh yeah, Chris Turner.
Chris Turner. Yeah. That guy
was
ridiculously
amazing.
Talented. He's got to. Somebody needs to scan his brain, because there's got to be something weird with his brain in like a good. I mean, you know what I mean, like a good way. Because there's just the dude's verbal recall is unbelievable, and he's talking about how he doesn't know anything about like the Cleveland Browns, but then like Cleveland Brown information comes up in his brain.
Yeah, he's like quoting like Cleveland Browns players from the 40s and
yeah, like
you
he's
got
to be a savant. Like he had an epileptic seizure when he was 3, and like now his brain is like open up to all these like different powers or something. If this had been in the 1960s, Stan Lee would have used him to create a character for Marvel.
Yeah, because kind of wrap all the criminals.
Start rapping about them, and they would be so mesmerized the police would catch them.
They were just like, the entire time I'm in jail, I'm just going to practice rapping, just like that superhero, that mutant animal. All right, here's a quote from Epictetus, a famous Stoic.
Yep. Wrote the Enchiridion.
I didn't know that. See? So
Greek for handbook.
The Stoicism of sales. So, okay, here's a quote. Just keep in mind, the more we value things outside our control, the less control we have.
Bang. So this is exactly how I would describe. This is why this is a good idea in the book. Is in sales, what do you know you can't control? You can't control anything that the other decisions the other people are making. I used to tell this to my sales team all the time at the two last companies I was director at, which was like, you you need to draw a circle, and it says, and this is your locus of control. You need to constantly be moving things within your locus of control. So don't wait for someone else to come up with an idea of when the next meeting can take place. Don't wait for them to do a proposal to their bosses in their organization. You need to go, here are the dates that work. Please choose one of these dates. Or what about this date? Let me just send you a calendar invite. Or would you be okay with me putting together a presentation that either I can give your boss with your permission, or that I can give it to you and you can present it to their boss? Or just every single one of these steps, you want to constantly be looking at what can I control and influence directly versus what I have to rely on others for.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers, and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast, And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
A lot of times people write me emails saying, oh, I'd love to be an intern for you. What do you need? And that's such a bad approach. Like,
yeah.
They're kind of outsourcing. They're kind of giving me homework to help them.
Yeah. Did you talk about this with Jordan Harbinger?
Yeah, I feel probably.
Like, yeah, because people, this is his complaint also, is he's like, it's like it's work for me to come up with. So that's what it is you want to go, how do I make the barrier to entry so low for this other person that I'm doing their job for them?
Seriously, why don't you write stoicism in sales?
Cool. See you in 30 days on Amazon.
And then you'll have your 60-page book. You'll hand it out, and you'll start getting big speaking gigs to go speak at sales conferences because stoicism is so hot right now.
Yeah.
You'll be the stoic sales guy. And you'll speak at every sales conference. You know, Procter & Gamble will hire you for to speak to their sales team. And you'll hand out your booklet to everybody. They have to buy all the booklet, the books.
And I'll have I'll have the workbook. And then I'll teach a course in which you can be certified to then teach this. Like,
let me see. Okay, here's another Stoic quote. It's from Seneca. It does not matter what you bear, but how you bear it.
Yeah.
Boom, go.
There's another one. So... the way that I think I would apply this to sales is I would just say you do not have a choice in the things that you have to do at any given time if you're working through sales. But the thing that you do have a choice about is how you're going to approach it and what you're going to do because of it. So if you got to make a number by the end of the month, you're going to have to deal with that. If you have to give 3 presentations in 3 days in 3 different cities, you're going to have to make decisions on how you can deal with that. And if you accept that this is the way that your life is going to be for the next given period of time, suddenly it becomes a lot easier. And I've always thought refusing, and this is a big lesson that I learned when I was traveling doing sales, I would have to fly from Texas to Minnesota to Yellowknife, Canada in the Northwest Territories.
This sounds like it sucks.
What?
Not the book.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what?
Just the life.
It's coming off the top of my dome, James.
The life of sales.
Yeah. It was rough. That's why I don't have that job anymore. But I was traveling all over the place. But what didn't suck about it is as soon as I stopped fighting that I was like, this is what my life is going to be, it suddenly opened my brain up to new options where I was like, I can do workouts in my hotel. I can go out to different places. I did comedy all over the US and Canada because I would just go find an open mic or a club anywhere I was. And so like how many comedians can say they've done stand up in Yellowknife, Northwest Territories of Canada? I can because I went out to the Black Raven and did a set at an open mic. But like as soon as I opened it up, I decided to choose how I was going to do it rather than if I was going to do it. And that changed completely. I got a really good buddy who's actually also a comedian in LA. His name's Chuck Kovalik. And I think about this a lot. He told me once, things are only going to be how you make them. And I feel like that applies. It's not what you're going to bear, but how you can bear it. And
So I'll apply.
I mean, that was circuitous, but I think I got it.
No, I think that was good. So the quote is, it does not matter what you bear, but how you bear it. I'll give you another example from sales. Let's say someone just simply rejects you. Okay. You can't change it. It's out of your control from the other quote.
Yeah.
So it's not, you can't, and also it makes no sense to be sad, but now you have a decision. Okay. They just said no to this one sales attempt. But that doesn't mean they're going to say no a year later.
Yeah.
So what I've done in the past with prior jobs is I kind of create a newsletter, not an official newsletter, but I'll write once a month to that person.
Yep.
Hey, here's an update on how our company's doing, how the product's doing,
yep,
how I'm doing. You know, I noticed this from your company. Congratulations. Maybe we can help you with this. And inevitably, let's say it's 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. They usually come back and say, oh, maybe can you come in and explain that to the team again? And suddenly they might become a client. So it's how you bear it. Like, okay, you move forward and you create value for that person as opposed to just being like, oh, they're jerks for rejecting me.
I got two things to say to this because now that my brain is spinning on it. The first is that this is almost the same advice that Viktor E. Frankl gave in Man's Search for Meaning.
Boom. Again, take Man's Search for Meaning and apply it to sales. A salesman's search for meaning. Go.
I love that. So
from the Holocaust to the sales room.
Oh my gosh. So what I was going to say though is that the idea of it's fundamental. It's like, where do you think sales come from? So my you know, first principles thinking is something that people talk about a lot, but I kind of applied it because I think, you know, not again, what are you going to bear, but how are you going to bear it? Let's say somebody doesn't buy from you. Do sales occur because somebody has a specific need and they fill that need with whatever is available at the time? Maybe. But also maybe what sales is actually is a process of relationship development in which one level of that relationship is transactional. And if somebody has a need that needs to be filled with something you're offering, then they'll do it. But if sales require trust, and trust is a process of consistency of action over time, then the rapport that you build and keep will result over that period of time in eventually enough trust that someone will pay you for something.
Right. So again, it does not matter what you bear, but how you bear it.
How
because
you bear it.
Those first 16 times. And actually, so Steve Cohen, when he reaches out to potential podcast guests, he always says it takes 16 touches, not necessarily 16 emails in a row, but like, oh, here's tickets to this. Would you like some? Or here's a party I'm going to. Would you like to go? Or here's, would you want this guy for your specific podcast as opposed to coming on James' podcast? So 16 different touches, and suddenly you built that trust, and now you could ask them again, can you come on the podcast? And it's, again, it's how you bear this potentially negative start to a relationship.
I have. Yeah, it's interesting because I just said this in my online course about cold emailing. 1% is like industry standard for cold outreach. So if you're achieving at a greater than 1 in 100 outreach ratio, you're already doing great. But like if you're much higher than that, then you're amazing in terms of how effective you are. But Doug Rushkoff, who's the author of all kinds of stuff.
Cyber, science fiction novels.
I reached out to Doug like a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, and asked if he wanted to be on my podcast. And he was like, I would like to. I'm really busy, yada, yada. And like, I still haven't met with him, but we've had like a number of times where we've come really close. And he's been like, oh, now last minute I have to go do this other thing, or for some reason, like I couldn't go. But we've developed this like relationship where I ask him for advice now and he'll like reach out when something strikes his fancy or whatever. And like, that's all because I reached out just from that thing and decided, even though he couldn't do it and I just kept it going. And so that's, you can do that with people.
Right. And then you never know where it ends up.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the initial thing you were trying to sell him on. Maybe something else. But are you going to write? I think you should write the stoic salesman.
The stoic salesman.
The 21st century guide to being the best salesman you could be.
Yeah.
And then I'm serious. Guide. Then you're going to get gigs as a speaker for, and then you'll start writing articles for, I don't know, Forbes or Inc. or whatever about stoicism and sales. You'll sign up with a speaker's agency. Oh, I'm the stoic sales guy. Don't you know me? Here's my book. And they're going to start booking you at every, you're going to make a lot of money at corporate gigs. You need to do this in the next 30 days.
I'm going
to. Brendan Lemon, you need to write the stoic salesman.
The
21st century guide to, or the ancient philosophy guide to being the 21st century salesman.
The second century BC guide to being the greatest 21st century salesman.
Yes. I like it. I would buy it. And I would go to that talk. Well, probably not, but I would. If I was a salesman, I would. If I was a salesman, I would.
Now I have to. Now I have to do this.
We had Taoism and comedy. We had the Eightfold Path from Buddhism and parenting. We had Stoicism and sales. So it could be applied to anything. And again, these structures, that quote that I just read you, it's not like a random quote. That quote was focus grouped by 2,500 years of people curating quotes from the Stoics.
I just love
and that one. So I Google it, and that's the first one that comes up.
Yeah.
So we know that people will resonate with these ideas.
I just love that. And when you think about it, when you think about it, this is kind of what, you know, like there's a whole group of like Christian writers who have been doing this for a long time. They have like the Christian Guide to Marriage, the Christian Guide to, and it's whatever. It's the same thing. They're just taking things from the Bible and applying it. And then when you think about it, this, the Sun Tzu's The Art of War, this is like, you know, business people have been doing this since whenever that was, you know.
Oh yeah. And The Art of War has so many great quotes that can be applied, but even better, not better necessarily, but The Art of War was one book among seven that were considered like these classic, you know, Asian, you know, strategy guides on war. Well, Art of War was just one of them, but it kind of was made the most popular, was sort of the first translated, and Napoleon would quote it or whatever. But it's even good to take an obscure text that also has withstood the test of time, but no one knows about it at all, and just totally rip from that for your book. Because no one will know. And by the way, it's good. Again, advice that is primal to us. It's withstood the test of time. So, okay, the 30-day book challenge. You're going to come back in 30 days, and I really want to see the Stoic salesman.
Mark the calendar, because it's what is, we'll do, it's January 26th right now. I'll come back. Let's just say February 29th. Put it at the end of that month. And so,
good thing for you, it's a leap year. So
I got that extra 24-hour period of time.
You got a little 24-hour
boost. Knowing me,
it'll
be like
there.
Me in college, where I'll be like on the 28th, I'm like, oh shit, I got to write this whole book.
Yeah, but the whole point is, okay, I'm just going to take 30 quotes, and I'm going to write as many stories as possible. This is a 20-page book, but I'm uploading it to Amazon today. I'm going to find a cover in the Kindle. They have like 6,000 covers you could choose from. And then you don't have to pick an ISBN number. You can
do their
ASIN number.
They're so easy. They make it so easy to publish a book.
And by the way, it's paperback and Kindle.
Yeah.
Like people don't realize that it's not just ebook. It's paperback too. And then you could read it. It could be an audiobook. And then you have like a full.
That's exactly what I did with the Cold Call Like a Comedian. Which was the first one I released on Amazon. And I literally just did all that stuff. Went to canva.com, literally just drew a stick figure for the front cover. And like, and it's on Amazon, and people are reading it. People, like 300 people in India read it like last month. So I'm going to have to go on an Indian tour.
Yeah, you need to go on the Indian tour.
Big, yeah.
The only problem is like.
I'll reach out to Russell Peters.
You probably will do better with $30,000 per talk than 30,000 rupees per talk. But that's.
Wait a minute!
Okay.
I only made $17.
You just have to stay in India, because a rupee goes a longer way.
A rupee goes a long way.
Which will be the topic of your novel about your sales tour. It all started when I was sitting on the couch.
That's
Jane
true.
Galvin's
I'll just
house.
Rip it word from Heart of Darkness, and it'll just be about me being in India, and it'll be called A Rupee Goes a Long Way.
Right. Exactly.
Well,
you
can write the foreword.
And I'll plagiarize it from the foreword of one of my books, but it's all legal. It's all legal plagiarizing. And by the way, everybody, like Zen and the Art of Archery, The Legend of Bagger Vance, The Tao of Pooh, all, I'm sure there's books, the salesman's
Bible. There's nothing
Bible.
New under the sun. Everything is just ripped from something else. I mean, like you said, like Tao of Pooh is ripped from Taoist books, and coronavirus is just ripped from SARS a few years ago. I feel like
God totally plagiarized the DNA of that one. He's like, this worked over here. I'm going to just do it over here now.
I just feel like the Chinese just keep jacking
these
viruses.
They just take our IP. We made the flu, and now they're running with it. So
it was the Spanish flu first.
Right.
Damn it.
We gave it to them. All right. Thanks so much. This went a totally different. This went off the rails completely from our original topic, which was to discuss
why you should only work 4 days a week.
The 4 day work week, which was kind of a ripoff of the 4 hour work, the 4 hour work week. So, but all right. Thanks so much.
I really, at some point, I want to talk about that though.
Let's talk about it right now. We're not done.
We could release them over more than one period of time. You could do.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.